The Good Samaritan, 1859, December 1st, 1859. From my diary, Ellen G. White. I will copy a few items noted in my diary. March 10th, Thursday afternoon. Sister I came in from the country. She lives about 10 miles from Battle Creek. She walked about 3 miles before she could get any opportunity to ride to Battle Creek. She looked sad, appeared chilled, and her sensitive heart was deeply affected as she thought of her errand. She had come for her daughter's wages. Stern necessity had compelled her to take that which she had previously earned, and now her only dependence was to get a few dollars from her daughter for bread. Her disagreeable errand sent the blood from the extremities. She appeared like a woman about to faint. Her teeth chattered, her whole frame shook. She had a husband at home, dying with a lingering consumption, and she had 4 children to supply with bread. They were poor, suffering poor. Their daughter has worked with us 10 weeks and has deprived herself of suitable clothing to help her parents. I asked the mother in the daughter's absence how they were prospered. She said when she was at Battle Creek 6 weeks before, A had given her her wages, and now she had come to ask her if she could let her have a little money to get some flour with. Said the mother, while her heart seemed ready to burst, I hate to be compelled to ask her wages. It is more than ought to be asked of any child, but I know not what else to do. As the mother told A her wants, A informed her mother that her wages were all taken up in getting her brother a pair of boots. The mother was disappointed. She saw that there was nothing for her. Said she, We could have done in some way without the boots, but breadstuff we must have. I stepped out of the house, leaving the distressed mother and daughter weeping. I related to my husband what was going on in the house. He entered into the matter with me, and we relieved their present necessities. Our little boys, H, E, and W, were moved at once. They begged the privilege of adding their mite, 10 cents each. The mother's burden was lightened, and we all wept together as she expressed her gratitude. I shall ever remember these circumstances. March 17th. We rode out of the city to visit Brother I's family, the daughter A accompanying us. We found the mother had been absent. She had just returned from walking 3 miles and back, making 6 miles, to obtain help to put up a fence around a little spot of land they had cleared for the purpose of making a garden. She was disappointed, and her long walk amounted to nothing. We found her husband very low, and his difficulties aggravated by the inconvenience of the dwelling. It was a log house, unfinished. There was only 1 room, and a chamber which they used for a sleeping apartment by climbing a ladder. The steam of the cooking increased the sick man's cough, and the only relief he could obtain was to go outdoors and cough in a painful, violent manner. They had 1 little son, about 10 years old, and small of his age. The labor of 1 nearly double his age came upon him. He seemed willing to do all he could. We had a praying season before leaving, and it was a solemn place. It was indeed the house of mourning. The daughter A prayed for her father in an earnest, touching manner, and then for her sisters. As our petitions went up unitedly to God, there was weeping aloud for some time in the dwelling. And after we had risen from our knees, we heard A outside of the house pleading with her sisters to serve God. And all were weeping aloud. All felt that a sacred tie was about to be broken. Our visit was a profitable one, and we believe God approbated the efforts we had made to comfort the afflicted, suffering one, and ease his passage to the grave. The knowledge that there were those who would have a kindly care for the mother and children was a great consolation to him, for he knew that he must soon part with them. After we returned home, we made the church acquainted with the situation of the afflicted family, and measures were immediately taken to relieve them. A little addition was put on to their log house for a cook room, that the sick parent might be made more comfortable. A few weeks after this, he fell asleep. He died, leaning upon the strong promises of God. Jesus was his friend, and all through his sickness, he seemed to lean upon his bosom with assurance that he should come forth in the resurrection morn, immortal. The family are now left without a husband and father. They must not want, they must be supplied with life's necessaries, if they are deprived of many of its comforts. And we believe it will be the highest pleasure for those who have abundance to help the poor who are needy. Especially should widows be taken care of. They should have our tenderest sympathy, prayers, and we should look after the interest of the fatherless children. Husbands and fathers, make their case your own, and have a care for them, just as you would wish others to have a care for your companion and children if you should be called away from your families. This is a cold and selfish world. It is natural to look out for self and neglect those who are pining for sympathy and consolation and are suffering privation. It is no marvel to me that a tender husband and father's last hours are often embittered by thinking what will become of their companion and children. Must they be left to the mercies of a cold and selfish world? I have seen the dying father look tearfully around upon the family circle, and his eye rest upon the faces of every one of his dear children. I have seen the quivering lip, and could read the thoughts of that tender parent. He knew the peculiar temperament of every one of his loved ones. He knew they were illy prepared to endure hardship, privation, and unfeeling coldness. No longer can a father shelter them in his dear arms. No longer can he soothe their troubled spirits and quell the rising passion that is endangering the happiness of the child and parents. Oh, how would the bitterness of death be taken away if he knew there were unselfish hearts that would feel for their woes, and that would make the case of his desolate, sorrowful household their own, and that would exert a holy, salutary influence upon his children, and patiently aid the burdened mother to bear the double burden laid upon her, that of acting the part of a father and mother to the little fatherless flock. Ellen G. White. At a business meeting of the church, August 7, 1859, it was resolved that Sisters Uriah Smith Kellogg and Richard Godsmark be a committee to receive donations of money or articles of apparel for the poor, and that Senior Uriah Smith, as secretary of this committee, be designated as the person with whom those in different places interested in this benevolent object may correspond. We take the liberty to name the following sisters to act as agents in this benevolent cause in their several localities, to receive money or clothing for the poor. It may be well for these to correspond with Senior Uriah Smith and with each other relative to the interests of the enterprise, and where to appropriate free will offerings. Some churches are passed by, not knowing who to appoint. They will please appoint soon. Ellen G. White, December 1, 1859. Friends in Michigan. Ellen G. White. About $75 has been advanced for the needy in this state since June, for the benefit of such as Sister C of Samaritan, number 1, and Sister I of number 2. It will be a pleasure for the sisters, and brethren too, in this state, to send in their mites to meet this sum, and to supply the winter's wants. Address Mrs. Uriah Smith, Battle Creek, Michigan. Ellen G. White. December 1, 1859. Aged Pilgrims. Ellen G. White. We were much gratified to meet with our aged brother and sister Coburn at Bucks Bridge, New York. They are among the first who embraced the Sabbath in Vermont. They have taken a straightforward course, manifesting a true devotion to the cause of truth. They have been in humble circumstances, yet have always been ready to do their part to help the servants of God. We have sometimes thought they did more than was their duty, but they seemed to consider it so great a privilege that we could not hinder them and deprive them of the blessing. The infirmities of age are upon them. They are poor and obliged to use the strictest economy to procure the common necessaries of life. Yet we have ever found them ready with their donation. 1 year ago, we met these aged pilgrims. Sister C expressed fears that they could not do as much as they wished to. Their health was poor, and she feared she could not knit, and expressed great regret that they could not do more. But this last fall, as we met them, she handed me 5 pairs of well-knit socks to be given to those who were poor and who should need them. They had managed in some way to donate thus liberally. It was a sacrifice on their part, yet they gave as though they considered it a great blessing. They will not lose their reward. There are many families that are as well, if not better, situated than these aged pilgrims, who, instead of helping, would sooner expect to be helped. Ellen G. White, December 1, 1859. Money for the Poor. Ellen G. White. M. Everts Gould Kellogg Saunders, E. Wilcox, H. Place, M. Churchill Hurlbut Wilcox, M. North Wilcox, each $1. R. Sawyer Austin, each $2. Buckland, F. Howland, each 50 cents. C. Rice, E. Buckland Preston Landon, H. Belden, each 25 cents. Tuttle Tuttle Graham, each 10 cents. Cook, 40 cents. E. Saxby, 30 cents. C. Farnsworth, 15 cents. This amount was left for Brother Chikosky in money, books, and clothes. Articles of Clothing. Mary Cochran, a second-hand dress, 3¾ yards factory cloth. Gould, 1 sheet, 1 pair pillowcases, 3 towels, 1 pair cotton socks, 1 pair cotton stockings, 1 pair mittens, 1 Delaine handkerchief. Sister S. Smith, 2 yards calico, 1 skein yarn. Wakefield, 1 pair pillowcases, 1 towel. Anna Wakefield, 1 pair pillowcases. Church in Ashfield, Massachusetts, 1 dress, 1 pair shoes, 2 aprons, 1 pair pants, 5 shirts, 2¼ yards calico. Church in Bristol, Vermont, etc., 1 shirt, stocking yarn, 1 towel, 2 yards factory cloth, outside of quilt and factory lining. Pierce, 1 pair socks, 1 pair stockings. D. Abbey, 1 factory garment, 1 pair cotton stockings. R. Abbey, 2 skeins of yarn, 5 yards of factory. J. Higley, 1 shirt, 1 pair of socks. Griggs, 2 pairs of children's cotton stockings. M. Higley, 1 pair of stockings. E. Huff, a bundle of necessary articles for poor. L. Hilliard, 3 cotton garments. Sister Coburn, 4 pairs of socks. L. Castle, 1 pair of stockings. Buck, 1 pair of mittens. Hannah Belden, 2 pairs of socks. Graham, 9 yards calico. That portion of the above-named articles which were collected east were left in care of Sister Whipple for the benefit of Brother Tchaikovsky. Those collected since are not yet appropriated. Ellen G. White.